D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Elliott Friedman, Sportsnet's NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliott, the great chase is on. Alex Ovechkin, 3 goals from becoming the NHL's all-time leading goal scorer, breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. I had the privilege of covering Alex Ovechkin's career when I first started out in this business. And there was a period of time, Elliott, and I know you remember this as well, where Ovechkin seemed to be slowing down. Now, slowing down to Ovechkin is scoring 35, 40 goals instead of scoring 50 goals or 60 goals. But what he's been able to do in his career at this stage of his career, to get to the precipice of history near the end of this season, is astounding. What has impressed you most about Ovechkin this season, particularly as we step on the doorstep of history?
Well, the fact that he's even right here right now, Adam, like I think when he got hurt, I don't think anybody believed that this was going to happen this season. And not only does it look like it's going to happen this season, but it doesn't even look like it's going to come down right down the wire. It's interesting. We talked on the pod this week about MVP candidates, and someone sent me a note and said, how can Ovechkin not be considered an MVP candidate this year? The pace he's scoring at and the fact the Capitals are the number two team in the league. And I the more I thought about it, the more I kind of agreed. But I just think the fact that he's here this year, like if you go back to last season, Adam, there was a point where I think people wondered if this was ever going to happen, that maybe he slowed down, as you said, and you know maybe Gretzky was safe after all. I think a couple of things changed. Obviously, he's had an enormous year, but I do think the fact the Capitals have been a good team has really energized him. Last year, they made the playoffs. They got wiped out in the first round, but they had a real awful start to the year. They looked terrible. I think there was a point last year where it looked like they were more of a threat to finish last than make the playoffs. But I think the winning has energized him. I think obviously he's energized too. And I think it's incredible that we're even talking about this now after the broken leg. I didn't think there was any way we were going to see this after the broken leg.
And we're at the point now where Gary Bettman is basically traveling with the Capitals and Wayne Gretzky, too, if I'm not mistaken. Not actually with the Capitals, but
I think he's
going to
join. Yeah, I think Gretzky's going to join. I wouldn't be surprised if he's there tomorrow night because, you know, the other thing you look at here, Adam, is the Capitals' schedule. They're kind of home, road, home, road. Like they're home tomorrow night, and then they go on the road Sunday against the Islanders, a team he scored on a ton. Now, I remember asking them a few weeks ago, if Ovechkin gets close, are you going to sit him? And they said, we wouldn't do that, and I don't think he even let us do it anyway. But you know that there's, like, it's Chicago tomorrow night. They're a young team. They're not really that great. They don't defend great. You know, you got to think that home fan base, yeah, I was joking today. I was doing a hit in Winnipeg, and I was like, he might play 45 minutes tomorrow night. So you can tell that they're going to do everything they can to try to get this done at home, I have a feeling.
Elliott, a lot of Predators fans are paying attention to the upcoming draft lottery. The Predators eliminated from postseason contention. Predators fans hope that this terrible season leads to them being able to draft a game-changing player. There are two forwards at the top of this draft, James Hagans and Michael Mesa. Now, I know that your expertise is not necessarily focusing on the prospects, but you do talk to a lot of people around the league, a lot of people who study these prospects. When you talk to people about James Hagans and Michael Mesa, what do you hear from people in the know?
Well, I would actually say to you that there are people, like our draft guys, we've got two guys, Sam Cosentino and Jason Bukla, who do our draft. And they say they actually add a third forward to that, Porter Martone. Now, James Hagans plays at Boston College, and Michael Misa, he plays in the Ontario Hockey League at Saginaw. And Porter Martone also plays in the Ontario Hockey League in Brampton. And they believe that those three forwards, along with the one defenseman who's at the top of the draft, his name is Matthew Schaefer, are sort of like the top four. So I would say to Predators fans, in addition to the two players that Adam just mentioned, Higgins and Misa, you should familiarize yourself with Martone too, because a lot of people put him up in the same class. I think Higgins is the guy who was getting a lot of the attention because I think for a while he was kind of seen as a potential number one pick and a little bit ahead of some of those other guys. He's tremendously skilled, tremendously skilled. And I think the fact that the other two names have caught up to him or are in the same breath of him is not necessarily because of anything bad that Higgins has done, but just because of how much that those two other guys have surged. You know, the one thing about Michael Misa is a few years ago in Ontario and Canada, they started something called exceptional status. They allowed kids to start, like, for a time, if you were kind of like 16 years old or younger or right around that cutoff, I don't remember the exact age, you weren't allowed to play junior hockey in one of the big leagues, Ontario, Quebec, or the West. And they said, sorry, you have to be a certain age. Well, it got to a point where for some of the best players at that age, they were threatening to go play in other leagues. And these junior leagues, they made a business decision to say, okay, we're going to create exceptional status. And it started with John Tavares. I think he was the first one. Like, he was such a good player at such a young age that they said, okay, we're going to create a window where players on your level are going to be able to get in. And they don't do it every year. There's only been, I think there's less than 10 players who've gotten it. It's around that number. And again, if I'm a little bit off, please forgive me. But Michael Misa is one of the players who got that exceptional status.
And some of the other ones, by the way, Connor Bedard was given exceptional status. Connor McDavid was given exceptional status, just for context.
Yeah, so thank you, Adam, for helping bail me out on this.
No problem.
But Michael Misa was one of the players who was given exceptional status a couple years ago. And at the beginning, it was a bit of an adjustment. He's a young guy. It happens. But over the last year and a half, you've really started to see the ability. And, you know, Michael Misa wasn't – there were a number of shocking decisions this year for the Canadian team at the World Juniors. Michael Misa was one of them. He wasn't put on the team, and they lost early. And that was a big flashpoint the moment it happened. People are like, Canada's going to regret this, and they did. And he wasn't the only one, but he was one of the biggest ones. And nothing that he has done since that tournament has convinced anyone that it was the right decision to leave him off the team. So he's a really, really talented young guy. And Martone is the other one I'd watch too. He's in that group. So it's those three guys you're going to be looking at if Nashville gets a top four pick. And I know right now that you guys are in the number three position.
Number three position. And so the way the lottery works, and I've been trying to study up on the details of this, Elliot, and it's been rare that the Predators have been in this, because I think they've only picked in the top five twice. By my recollection, Seth Jones was fourth overall in 2013, and then the very, very first year that they were in the league,
David Legwand,
they
right?
lost the lottery and they picked second. Actually, they moved up, if I remember, to get to second. They traded up to get to David Legwand as the second pick. They haven't had a top five pick other than that. But if you're third, and it looks very likely that they will end up in that 30th overall spot, which means they could move up to one. And they couldn't fall lower than five, correct?
Yeah, so they changed the rules a couple years ago. They changed the rules a couple years ago because they didn't like the way they were becoming so random. Like, the team that really hated it was Detroit, because they had a number of bad years in a row. and they kept on getting hosed. So they kind of changed the they weren't the only one who was upset, but Detroit was one of the ones that got hurt the most. So basically the way it works is a team cannot move up more than 10 points in the lottery, and only two picks are determined by the lottery, one and two. So that means you're right. You can't really have teams dropping like they used to. Like there used to be some teams that really used to drop. You can't. So you have the drawing for one, then you have the drawing for two, and then everybody slots in after that. So the maximum you can drop is two spots. But if somebody who, for example, is 13th wins it, they can't go to number one because you can only go up to right. 10 spots.
You made some interesting comments about the forwards up there. I think what would be interesting is it does seem like everything that I've read from different sources is that Schaefer, the one defenseman, is the clear-cut number one. And that would be something – obviously the Predators need everything right now. That Barry Trotz has been just coveting a number one center for a long time. But it would be interesting if you were to win the lottery and the best player available by consensus is Schaefer – do you take the defenseman? Because I think you could argue that they need a defenseman, going forward just as much as the center, even though the center has been the more elusive thing to find in franchise history.
Well, Willie, I look at what's happening in front of you, and I see two very different things. It depends to me, like San Jose, Chicago, right? Like if San Jose wins the lottery and goes first, and right now they're as we sit here today, they're the last place team in the league. They're 2 points lower than Chicago. Like you can never have enough offense. I really do believe that. But you have Celebrini and you have Smith, right?
Right.
And you have Eklund. Like I look at them on the blue line, and sometimes I think when you take need at the top of the draft, you can really walk yourself into trouble where you don't need to. But if you evaluate all guys equally, I could see San Jose saying we need a defenseman more than we need a forward. And then you have Chicago, which is at 31st right now. So they have the second pick. Like they got a lot of D and they got a lot of young D. Like they took Lev Shunov last year was the second overall pick, and they have other defensemen, including, some of the guys they're debuting right now, who are starting to see play, like Sam Renzel, one of the kids that just made his debut this week. I could see Chicago saying, we have young defensemen. We need some more young players who can play with Bedard. And so, does it mean they go that way? No, it doesn't, because like I said, I do think sometimes if you draft for need, you can really make mistakes. But again, if all things are equal, I can see San Jose leaning defense and Chicago leaning forward. So depending on where it all ends up, the decisions could be made in front of you. You could say, let's just say it stays the same. I would be surprised if Schaefer got down to three, just because of the way everybody talks about him. But I could see you guys having a pick between two of Misa, Higgins, and Martone. I could definitely see that.
Yep. And I think Nashville would be excited for that. One other reference point, and Elliot, as you probably know, the Titans have the first overall pick, and we've had endless discussions about, is this a great year to have the first pick? How good are these prospects, especially at quarterback, compared to past years? And the quarterbacks that are at the top of those draft class. The same discussion happens every year in the NHL. For example, the Nashville draft a couple of summers ago that you were at has turned out to be exactly what it was hyped up to be, right? Very good. A lot of good prospects. In fact, Nashville just signed Matthew Wood. He's not going to play tonight, but he skated with the team for the first time today here in Dallas, so it's great to see him.
Not surprisingly, all this craziness is leading into all the immigration issues, I guess. They got to get that sorted out. So
yes, and that's not, it's not done yet.
Hopefully that will happen fast. Yeah.
They're hoping it happens sooner than later, but he's not going to be in the lineup tonight. But how would you rate this draft class? I'm hearing it's not as loaded as other years, and maybe next year looks a little bit better. But what are you hearing along those lines in general?
I think that's true, Willie. I think that in overall depth, next year is better than this year. I think that's true. I think there were some teams later in the first round who were more comfortable giving up draft picks this year as opposed to next year. So I would overall, Willie, agree with that. However, if you go into the top five, if you go into that top four, if you end up in that spot, you're going to be really happy with one of those players. Like I said, our two draft guys really like those four players. They like Schaefer, they like Misa, they like Higgins, and they like Martone. So they think if you're in the top four, you're slightly a cut above. Now, the interesting guy, and again, I don't follow these players as closely as our draft gurus do. I just don't have the time, so I want to be careful about how I say this. But
yeah,
there's a really interesting guy. Like, basically, if you go to NHL.com, they rank their scouting service, Central Scouting, ranks all the players, and they go by they sort of go by North American skater, international skater, North American goalie, and international goalie. And I stress on these that the one thing you have to be careful with is they don't do this with the benefit of any in-person interviews. They don't do that. They simply rank them as players, what they see. But it's always good to get an idea of what they're thinking of. The guy who's number five on their list right now is a player is a player by the name of McQueen, Roger McQueen. And, you know, for example, Don Sweeney, the Bruins GM, and it's really unbelievable when you think about it, that the Boston Bruins are in last place in the Eastern Conference. Like, even 2 months ago, who would have thought that this would have been even possible? But this player, Roger McQueen, who's ranked fifth, he plays in the Western Hockey League for Brandon. He's a really interesting guy in the sense that there are some teams are spending a lot of time looking at him right now. It's been a little up and down. There's been a split. There are some teams who think very highly of him. There are some teams who are uncertain. And again, this is not my expertise, so I'm always careful about this stuff. But whoever has the fifth pick, it's going to be a very interesting decision with him, because it sounds like there's a real split on where teams think his ceiling is. So it's top four, then a really interesting guy in McQueen, and then we'll see.
Elliot, real quick, we're a little short on time, but with what the Blues did, we just saw a lot of the Blues the last couple of weeks, and they're on fire. And they famously signed the two restricted free agents last year, and they both played great. Do you think there will be a lot more offer sheets this summer?
I think that there's noise about it, yes. It's always a question as to whether or not it's real or it's just noise. And, you know, one of the things that I think is interesting is there's going to be more cap room, Willie, because the cap is going up. So some teams say to me, everyone's just going to match. The one thing I'm curious about, Willie, is does a team say, okay, we're going to do a one-year poison pen where teams don't have cap room, and then we'll worry about extending that player later. That's the one I'm curious about, because some teams will have some cap room for that, and there will be teams who are vulnerable for that. And I'll say this. I had one GM telling me, seeing the success of those two players in St. Louis, he said to me, my owner's asked a bit about us doing that.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, joining us on D-Mace, Fingen, and Donick, presented by Old National Bank. Elliot, thank you so much for your time. As always, we'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
You as well. Elliot Freeman, always a pleasure. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, We're 2 days out from the Final Four, and I want us to all touch on something that's been a big talking point about this NCAA tournament. We'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
And your point about money is really good. Like, money and education and money and love of the game are not mutually exclusive. So I hear from people all the time. We'll be talking about another thing and go, hey, you wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe what this mid-major player asked us for the other day. He asked us for $2 million. I'm going, okay, well, is he worth $2 million? Hell no. Why are you offended by that? Like, if I drove my car into your driveway and said, hey, I want to sell you my car for $2 million, what would you tell me? And you go, I tell you, go F yourself. And I said, well, I don't think you should say that to the player, but say to the player, here's what we've got available to you. Here's the offer we're willing to make. If you can get $2 million somewhere else, we don't want to stop you from that. You know, they'll say, well, we don't even know what the market is. You know what the player's worth to you. So make the offer that's worth it to you. And if there's a counter that's within reason, then you can discuss it. If somebody's asking for this astronomical amount, you know they're not worth, isn't it just time to move on from that person?
That was ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis talking about the transfer portal in the NCAA. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. The Final Four begins on Saturday. As you know, it's number one versus number one versus number one versus number one. Florida versus Auburn in one semifinal. Houston and Duke in the other national semifinal on Saturday in San Antonio. And I thought there was a really interesting story, guys, in The Athletic written by Ralph DiRusso with the headline, thanks to the transfer portal, this March's Cinderella stories are players, not teams. And we've heard quite a bit over the course of this tournament, you know, people lamenting the lack of Cinderella stories in this tournament. The fact that all four number one seeds made it to the Final Four. Where art thou, Loyola Chicago, Florida Atlantic? If you want to go back even further, Butler. Like, those are the teams that excite casual fans about March Madness. I, on the other hand, love the fact that the top four teams by far in this country will be playing for a national championship Saturday and Monday. But Ralph Russo mentions in the article that two of the very best players competing for a championship this weekend would not be where they are today if not for the new world order of college sports. That's Walter Clayton out of Florida and Jani Broome out of Auburn. I mean, how many of you know that Jani Broome spent multiple years at Morehead State before transferring to Auburn? Belmont fans certainly do know.
He kept them out of the tournament one of the years, for sure.
Walter Clayton played at Iona for Rick Pitino and had a tournament game with Iona. And has turned into an absolute clutch player for the Gators, as you've seen a couple of times in this tournament. But I do think, Willie, this is an interesting idea that the Cinderella stories, according to Ralph Russo of The Athletic, are not the teams because of the transfer portal. It's the players.
Yeah, I guess that's cute. I don't know if that makes it for exciting TV viewing, because I think you, going back to the Jerry Seinfeldism of we root for the clothes, right? It's more fun for Sister Jean and Loyola Chicago and the fun, you know, of McNeese State, which we didn't see that much of this year. McNeese State was one of the bigger upsets, and they were what, a 12 seed?
A 12 against Clemson.
Yeah. You know, you want to see those massive upsets. Fairleigh Dickinson, you know, those are the fun things, more so than an individual player moving up the ranks behind the scenes. But that is definitely a big dynamic. I think what we're learning is just like you would expect, guys develop at different rates. I'm sure when Michael Clayton was 18 years old, he wasn't as good as he is now. And to his credit, he developed a ton between ages 18 and 20. And all of a sudden, he became a more attractive player. And Florida was smart enough to see the growth and go get him. And they had to have money to do that. It's not as fun and sexy a story, but it is the story. So the article is dead on that is a huge trend, but it's why we're seeing less big upsets in the tournament, and we're probably going to continue to see less because teams are only going to get better at identifying the mid-major players who can help major college teams, because that's going to be the case every year.
The story notes, Derek, that this year's Final Four teams have 20 scholarship transfers from other NCAA schools on their roster. Auburn leads with 7, Florida has 6, Duke has 5, and Houston has 2, both from other Big 12 programs. Cougar star L.J. Cryer is in the Final Four for the second time after being part of Baylor's 21 title team as a freshman. Florida, Auburn, and Duke all have at least one starter who once played at a mid-major.
Florida's got Will Richard, who played at Belmont for a year.
So Florida would have Clayton. Mm-hmm. Auburn would have Broome. And Duke has Cion James, who was at Tulane before he transferred to Duke.
Because if you look at, just look at the sort of the history of Cinderella teams, you know, making a truly deep run, you know, and I don't think this year's, because when we're talking about Cinderella teams, what are we talking? 16, 15, 14.
Usually 13. A double digit. Yeah, I think you 13, have to be at least 12. A double digit seed. What would you say the threshold is, Willie? 11 and under? Or would you even put 10 in there as well?
No, I can't put 10 in there. The way these teams are seeded now and how good the 10th seed, I mean, Arkansas was a 10th seed, and they end up being that. They are, toward the end of the season, they became a really good team. For me, I think it's 12 and under.
I would say 11. I would go 11 and under. What about you, Willie? What would you put the threshold for a Cinderella?
Cinderella, to get to the Final Four, I would say 11 and up. You know, the true Cinderella, I think what we remember a lot is, you know, the 13 and ups pulling the big upset early. Those teams don't often get past the second round, let alone the Sweet 16. So there's different levels of Cinderella. I think Loyola, Chicago, getting to the Final Four, that was a great Cinderella
story.
What
was St. Peter's, a 14? What was St. Peter's?
They were a 15, but I don't think they got past the Sweet 16. I don't think they got to the Final Eight, did they? Or did they get the Final Eight?
So when you're talking about Cinderella teams, let's just say we go from 12 on down, 13, 14, 15, 16.
St. Peter's went to the Elite Eight in 2022 as a 15 seed.
As a 15, wow, that's Cinderella-ish, no question.
Yeah, that's truly Cinderella, but you don't find these teams doing this on the I would almost believe wholeheartedly that the numbers are not even in the teens. But it depends on what do they consider a Cinderella team. Is it 10 through 16? Is it 12 through 16? Is it 13 through 16? What do you consider a true Cinderella team? But I don't think the numbers are so large that, oh, my goodness, we're not going to see it anymore. I think we're still going to continue because this is what happens. They don't know you're a good player until you show you're a good player. Those teams are not coming to look for you if you're averaging 1 point per game or 2 points per game or 3 points per game. Or what you're doing is not even scratching. It's just like it's not registering on scale. It's not. If you are going to move up, that means more than likely you were the best player on your mid-major team. And we saw that, like the world saw it. And then you were able to transfer and move up to potentially be a starter somewhere else because nobody knew about Chaz. Nobody knew about Chaz. Until when? Until he started showing that he can play at this level.
Dalton Connect,
the same thing. You know, so I still believe you will have your fair share of Cinderella teams. Why? Because those guys that want to move up, they got to show first that they can move up. And typically they show it what? During a tournament.
Quickly, let's get to Scott in Hendersonville on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Scott, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, I think one thing to really look at, especially Auburn in the Final Four, to differentiate, it's not just getting portal players that were good, like, you know, Broome was all league in his league, but they've excelled at getting the multiple year transfer, and a lot of those guys weren't quote unquote stars. You know, the Denver Jones, Chaney Johnson, you know, came in and was at the end of the bench, and I don't even know what they saw in him, but he was a workout warrior who kind of transformed himself. So you look at teams like Arkansas, which arguably had more talent come in through the transfer portal, you know, or Kentucky, which, you know, Kentucky is it's a one-time deal, but they were all there for 1 year. I think the model should be, or the smart money, is to try to get guys in that are multiple-year transfers, because this is the same Auburn team that lost to Yale last year. So, you know, the difference is they had time to develop and grow together. And I think it's going to, you know, you don't want to do the quote-unquote Calipari one-and-done deal of just going out and buying the best mid-majors every year, because I don't think that will work ultimately as well as putting together a team that can play together for two or three years.
Interesting call,
it's
Scott.
It's a good point. And Auburn is old. They're older, right? They have a lot of seniors, a lot of guys that are fifth-year seniors. So that's a good point. And so that's the best of both worlds. If you can get older guys that have been with you for a couple years, that's good evaluation. So the whole formula has changed rapidly and just in the last two or three years.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on the NCAA tournament. The Final Four continues Saturday with the national semifinals. But coming up next, this transfer portal conversation, it hit home the other day. Let's discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game, presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. I also want to tell everybody that the Atlanta Braves country road trip is coming to town and teaming up with the Predators and 1025 The Game. Join us at the BetMGM Sports Lounge inside Bridgestone Arena on Wednesday, April 16th for a Braves watch party as they take on the Tampa Bay Rays at noon. There will be free giveaways like hats and t-shirts, plus you could win autographed baseballs and free tickets. For more details, visit thegamenashville.com/events. And by the way, Willie, Chase, a noted Braves fan, did come in here and tell us that the Braves may be providing us with some Braves jerseys, and he really hopes you wear one.
You have to. It ain't no really hope. It's required that you wear it.
I need to check my contract on that one.
I think it's a show requirement.
It's a show requirement. Yeah. You have to wear the Braves jersey.
And speaking of that, the Braves, man, what a rough start. They play two unbelievably hot teams right now, the Padres and the Dodgers, who have combined to lose zero games. The Padres and Dodgers are,
so you say,
both undefeated, and they have victimized the Braves. Last night, Shohei Ohtani, and a walk-off homer to cap off a comeback where the Braves were up 5-0 early in the game. So the Braves are going through it right now. I think they'll come around and be right in it before it's all over. You've got three wild cards now. They got plenty of time to fix it. But, man, what a tough start to the season.
Absolutely. And I just want to pass this along as well before we continue on. In case you missed it, the National Weather Service, I should say, the Storm Prediction Center, issued a tornado watch for portions of western and middle Tennessee, among other regions, effective as of 12:50 this afternoon until 10 o'clock tonight. Primary threats include a few tornadoes likely, with a couple of intense tornadoes possible, scattered damaging wind gusts to 70 miles an hour likely, scattered large hail events to 1.5 inches in diameter possible. So although we did have a big storm last night, the possibility exists for more storms. Our region is under a tornado watch, which is not as severe as a tornado warning, but just keep that in mind as you go throughout your day. So I wanted to end the show, speaking of the transfer portal, we played that clip from Jay Billis, and I think that applies to what we saw at Vanderbilt recently. Jason Edwards, Vanderbilt's leading scorer this past season, he's portaling. He's out. And Gentry Estes wrote a column at the Tennessean about it. Jason Edwards' about face from Vanderbilt basketball is common in the transfer portal era. So let's turn it over to our resident Commodore. Willie, I would love your thoughts on this situation with Jason Edwards.
I think the Billis comment is an interesting backdrop to all of this, because Billis has been very pro player. He loves to point out the double standard of a coach being able to leave whenever, and the players have never been able to have that freedom. But it's almost like the 1970s and early 80s in baseball, when the pendulum swung from, you know, the owners controlling everything with player movement to all of a sudden the players years later, that they almost had way too much power and maybe didn't realize how well they had it. And so I still think we've got to work towards, in college sports, a little better balance that works for everybody. This everybody's a free agent every year. I think his point is a good one in the, because this is what happened with Edwards, right? A player comes in and says, I think I'm worth X. Let's say the number is 1.5, 1.7 million. And the coach in Vanderbilt says, well, I'm looking at our budget and where you fit, and we think you're worth 1 million. And I don't know the specific numbers, but I've talked to a lot of people about Edwards, and I think that's in the ballpark. Now, Edwards, for those that aren't Vanderbilt fans, he was a second team, I think, all-SEC player. I think he ended up being their leading scorer.
He did.
Vanderbilt really did it by committee, right? If you took a look, Edwards was kind of an instant offense kind of guy. He has flaws in his game. He's not a big guy. He's not a defensive stopper. And he was taken out of a lot of games and situations late in games where they went offense and defense. But he obviously was a huge reason why they went to the NCAA tournament. He's been at a number of different schools. He was at North Texas last season.
The Mean Green.
And a total unknown, right? And then comes to Vanderbilt and makes a big name for himself and now is clearly looking to cash in. Now, my viewpoint might be different than Jay Billis's or Jason Edwards or plenty of other people. I think that staying where you fit, even if it's to take a little bit less, and, oh, by the way, if anybody gives a you-know-what about the value of a degree at Vanderbilt, I don't know if anybody cares where they graduate from now or not. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a lot of people are. They chase the money. That's fine. That's your choice. But Jason Edwards wants to maximize what he's worth, and as Jay Billis points out, it's what the market will bear, right? And so good for him. If he can get $2 million to go somewhere else, okay, that's great. That's the rule now. I just sometimes think the players don't think on a second or third level of what is the best decision for you rather than what's the maximum amount of dollars that I can get to play next year. But that is college basketball right now, and I think Vanderbilt has said, okay, go ahead. Just like Jay Billis said, go ahead, see if you can find it. We're going to work with the $1 million or million whatever, and we'll find whatever our budget is, we'll find somebody who can be equally as good. We'll see how it turns out for both parties.
By the way, Derek, so in that podcast, that was, by the way, Ryan Russillo's podcast. He had Jay Billis on to preview the Final Four. Jay Billis also mentioned, when Jay Billis played back in the day, people would come up to him and said, there was much more loyalty in your day. And Jay Billis's response was, we didn't have a choice.
Exactly.
We didn't have a choice but to be loyal. There was no player empowerment, so
right,
to speak.
Just like a baseball player in the 1970s couldn't do what a, because there was no free agency. There wasn't such a thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, listen, if he wants to go out and capitalize on his ability to play the game, then so be it. Because I think a lot of these young men and women are starting to understand that because it's true, there are X amount of athletes in each year's graduating class. And in their respective sports, I'm sure the numbers are very low when it comes to that man or woman actually playing on a professional team. So these student athletes or athletic students are looking at it from, I need to maximize my ability to make seven figures while I can. And I still get a degree. A degree at Vandy, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's great. And I wish my degree was from Vandy if under different circumstances. Or like my son went to Boston University. I wasn't smart enough to get in Boston University, nor was I smart enough to get in Vandy either. But these kids are starting to understand that, man, I may not make it to the NBA. I may not make it to the WNBA. I may not make it to the NFL. And I'm sure the numbers are even lower in the NBA and in WNBA as it is in the NFL. I more than likely will not make it there. So what do? I maximize my ability to make money now. And if it means that I transfer every other year or every year, I believe as long as I'm doing what I need to do in the classroom, getting my credits, and those credits then transferring so I can graduate in 4 or 5 years, then I think you can't fault them for that. Now, I'm not saying that all kids have that sort of forward thinking, but I'm sure a lot of them do because they're like, I can't make this much money, and I'm not going to the NBA, the NFL, WNBA, MLB. That's not me, so I need to make the money now.
The question is he going to get what his people, his agent, is telling him he can get, or what he basically said, it will take this to keep me at Vanderbilt. Can he get it there? Because the market is blind, right? There's not.
I'm not leaving him unless I have a guarantee. This is what I'm getting.
Is he that good? I don't know. If he can, great for him. Because it all sounds great. Maximize what you get.
Yeah.
If you're worth what you think you're worth. Is somebody going to give him $2 million or $1.7 million? I don't know if he's that good. He's a good player. Is he that good? We'll find out.
That'll do it for us today. Willie, come back from Big D already. We miss you. Predators and Stars tonight at 7. Pregame at 6. But before that, Stillman & Company coming up next.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, wonderful day. Stay out of this rain. Stay dry. Peace.